James Welsh, civil attorney from Omaha, Nebraska, and been doing this a long, long time. We are here because of an appeal and a mistake that we feel was made by the lower court, the Honorable Travis O'Gorman, and who is a very, very good judge. I've tried several cases in front of him, but we think that he made a mistake in his interpretation of the statute in Nebraska dealing with an owner of a dog. Under our statute in Nebraska, is strictly liable for any damage that it does to a person. Now, in the ruling in this case, the judge interpreted that the plaintiff in this case, even though he was injured because of a dog by the name of Gunner, the plaintiff, Harley Smith, was a cowboy or a ranch hand of a cattle company out in Box Butte, a company that raises anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 head of cattle. He was in what is called the crowding pen, and he was getting to have, wanting to get two cows into what they call the snake pen. And to do that, he has to get into the crowding pen and move those cows. Now, one of the claims we made is that the crowding pen shouldn't have had to cause him to go inside. There should have been some type of area on the outside that he could direct those cows into a long pen where they treat the cows with whatever they want to do as far as shots, cleanliness, and so forth. When he was in that cow pen with two cows, Gunner, the cattle company's dog, which is a cattle dog, bit one of the cows in the back of the leg, and that cow, because of that, ran over Mr. Smith, causing terrible injuries to his head and face, and needed his jaw reconstructed, head injuries, and there was over $200,000 in medical bills. Under our statute, section 54-601-1B, we're here so that the interpretation given by the lower court in reading that statute, he had a misinterpretation. Maybe I can do it against this. And I know that some of you are far away from this. Oh, thank you, thank you. Let's get it over here so that they can see it. Maybe put it up there.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sure that you've all read the statute, and it goes back to way back in the 40s, where the interpretation and when they were getting ready to make this statute, dogs are considered to be personal property, and as such, the owner should be liable for any damages caused by his dog or her dog. We all own dogs.
Is that what the statute says, Mr. Welsh?
No, that was the purpose of the statute.
Okay.
And I put that here, and the statute is such that dogs are hereby declared, this is under this section, and what I've done is put to you that part of the statute that applies to this particular injury, this particular plaintiff, and this particular dog owner.
So you're conceding that subparagraph A doesn't apply because the dog did not bite your client, is that correct?
That's correct, that's correct. I am going right to 546001B.
So your contention is that under 54601B, injuries occurred by reason of a dog injuring any person, correct?
The dog, yes. What I am saying is, under the statute, the dog owner is liable to any injuries caused to a person. But it doesn't necessarily, under the statute, have to mean that the dog actually bit the person. Under the circumstances, it is the dog causing injury to a person.
So the phrase by reason of is in your version caused by.
Right.
And then we got to find out those things that the dog caused.
Right.
Okay.
And I think a good example just happened to me a couple of months ago on a highway going to South Dakota, Sturgis, where we are going, two of us are going down the street on our motorcycle, and a dog came out chasing the biker that was next to me, causing him to turn into me. I had to go up on the yard and come back. And that dog didn't bite him, the dog didn't bite me, but if in fact I had been injured, then the owner of that dog under this statute would be liable to me for my injury.
So how far does that go? I mean, how many steps of intervening causes would that apply to?
I don't think it...
And Mr. Welsh, can you make sure you're talking to the microphone? So
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought I was yelling loud enough, but okay. Under the statute of what we have here, it doesn't specifically say anything about how far you have to be. What we are saying here under the interpretation of the statute is that if a dog causes injury, doesn't have to bite, but if in fact what the dog does ends up as the proximate cause of the injury to a person, then the owner of that dog is automatically liable.
Where's that proximate cause standard come from?
Where did the proximate cause, I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Was when you say it's proximate cause, is the causation standard we're looking at, where do you obtain that? That's not specifically set out in the statute.
The statute does say that it will be liable for any and all damages that are accrued. So, If you can, and it can be sometimes when you have an injury, there may be one or more causes. But if the dog is a cause of the injury, then you have the right to make a claim, and under strict liability, the owner of the dog is automatically liable.
Do you suppose when Mr. Smith went to the hospital and suppose he was asked what happened, would he say, oh, I was injured by a dog?
No. In fact,
And if we're to give the statute its plain and ordinary meaning, what light does that shed on how it would be interpreted in this case?
In this particular case, he was injured because of the dog gunner. Because of the dog gunner nipping, which the owner knows, this is the reason that gunner is the dog in the cattle company, because the dog is and has and does nip cows.
So the dog bit the cow and the cow ran over your client. What does the statute tell us about the ownership of the domestic animal, and is that important to our analysis?
That's what it is. And this is where we are claiming that the district court judge, O'Gorman, was incorrect in his interpretation of the statute. I have put together for you that you're looking at the interpretation of the statute. Under the bottom half of the statute, it talks about that all damages that may occur, and then it goes into to any person, firm, or corporation by reason of such dog or dogs killing, wounding, injuring, worrying, or chasing any person, or persons. And then it says, or any sheep or domestic animals belonging to such person, firm, or corporation. And the way that Judge O'Gorman interpreted this, he says there is no basis to impose strict liability for the indirect harm to the plaintiff, Harley Smith, for a dog nipping at a domestic animal, and that's what happened, especially when the domestic animal does not belong to the plaintiff.
And Mr. Welsh, I think your time is...
I entered just perfect, Judge, because I think now you understand why we have this interpretation of the statute.
Thank you very much. Mr. Olson, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Steve Olson. I represent Myron Cattle Company. There are two issues we've already talked about. Number one is the number of steps we have to go to make sure that we're going to say an owner is strictly liable. The appellant has asked this court to adopt basically the Florida rule. And the Florida rule tells us that the owner of a dog is basically an insurer for all actions of that dog. The problem with that analysis is the appellant fails to recognize the difference of the Florida statute in relation to the Nebraska statute. So in Florida, they say an owner of a dog is liable for all actions of that dog, period. That's it. And yet in Nebraska, we have these words of limitation that restrict the ability to say an owner is strictly liable for the actions of the dog. That dog has to chase, it has to worry, it has to kill, it has to wound, it has to injure.
What's the object of doing those things? They might be gerunds.
The object was to first to protect domestic animals, and later in another amendment was to protect people. So in 1992, when this amendment came in to include the word injure to those other terms, it was simply in relation to a woman who had been injured. She fell over as a result of an interaction with a dog and hurt her hip. She had internal injuries, but could not recover because of the terminology wound. And so the legislature amended to include injure.
So that's a dog arguably injures woman.
In that case,
right. But we have a more attenuated set of facts, don't we?
Absolutely.
So can you speak to whether or not the statute anticipates an attenuated set of facts, a two-step?
And our position would be it does not. The legislature had those opportunities in 61 and again in 92 and any other time to amend our statute to be something like Florida statute so that the actions of a dog could be far removed from the injured party. But our legislature chose not to do that. In 92, when they inserted the word injure, the legislature could have taken out the other words, chasing, worrying, killing, wounding. So we would have had a statute that just says, dog owner, you're liable for any injuries. Then the appellant could probably argue that you could separate the actions of the dog to the plaintiff.
But you're making this binary. It's like all or nothing.
Well, I think the Donner case in Nebraska, I think the Llewellyn case out of Minnesota have all addressed the fact that when the legislature puts different words into that statute, you have to consider those words somewhat together. In Minnesota, they had the word attack, and then they amended to include injure. But the legislature, the courts there said you still have to consider those two words together. And as a result, they used the proximate causation terminology in the standard to say there has to be some aggressive action by that dog directed at a plaintiff.
Is proximate cause the standard here?
I'm not sure our courts have really said what the standard is, and Judge Cupp in the Johnson case alluded to that.
What standard would you advocate for?
We would advocate proximate cause for the simple reason that if we went to cause in fact or but for, that gets us to Florida. And that's exactly what Florida applies, is a but-for causation. So you can have, for example, in the Annapolis case, where you have a loaded gun in the back seat, and the guy, and it's a small car, and the guy takes his dog and puts him in the back seat, and the gun goes off. Obviously, that dog didn't do anything to aggressively or directly discharge that gun and injure a plaintiff. But because of the mere presence of that dog, the but-for proximate causation, or the but-for causation, allows that owner to be strictly liable. So we think that that but-for causation in Nebraska would be completely contrary to the clear intent of our statute that includes those limitation words of worrying and chasing and killing and so forth. If this court is going to do anything today, it should consider adopting a standard, and that standard should be proximate causation.
Can proximate cause and two steps? That's what we have here, right? We have the cow, or the dog to the cow, and the cow to the person.
Yeah.
So can proximate cause be two steps, or it can only be one?
Well, we would say in this case, based upon the facts and proximate cause, it can only be one step. Because in the plaintiff's complaint, he never said that that dog did anything in relation to the plaintiff. He didn't chase him, he didn't worry him, he didn't bark at him, he didn't scare him. And the testimony was devoid of any of that type of evidence as well. So you've got a separation, and I think based upon the cases, probably the best case to look at is out of Oklahoma, the Nichols case, where a dog went and attacked a horse, caused the horse to start bucking, that injured the plaintiff. Oklahoma adopted proximate causation, not but-for causation, and they found that they had to be something direct as it relates to the dog and the plaintiff.
Isn't causation normally a question for the jury?
It is, but many of the cases have found that it's a legal issue. And here we believe it is, simply because there were no allegations in the complaint and no proof that there was any direct action between this dog and the plaintiff. That's
your legal reading of the statute.
Pardon me?
See, that assumes your legal reading of the statute. It has to be dog on person attack.
Well, yes, and I think that also is the result from proximate cause. That certainly was the result of the Nickel case, where the court said, okay, you're too removed. In other words, you got the dog attacking the horse, and the horse bucks off the rider. And the court said, no, it has to be something that is directed to the plaintiff.
Was there a statute like ours?
That statute was not quite like ours, but it was certainly nothing like Florida's. That statute said that an owner of a dog is liable if the dog bites or injures.
What?
Another person. That was the statute. So again, it contemplated some kind of direct action against plaintiff.
Against a person.
A person.
So in your view then, that there's dogs attacking sheep and other domestic animals is what? Meaningless?
Well, no, it's meaningless here because the plaintiff did not own those domesticated animals. And that's the key in that last part of that statute, okay, is that the plaintiff has to own the domesticated animals.
Because
so we believe
statute assumes that the injury then in that clause is to the animals.
Exactly.
It didn't
exactly
anticipate the animal then bucking and harming a person.
Exactly. And that was the intent of this statute years ago, was to initially provide protection to domesticated animals that became prey to dogs. That's why we started this.
What is the significance of the legislature's choice of the word accrue?
I think it was to two things. Number one is to talk about damages, and if there are damages, but also then to talk about here are the limiting factors. And you cannot read both of those when we talk about damages that accrue. Then we also have to read, okay, accrue because of what?
Is it a synonym for result?
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
And what does that do to our interpretation of the statute?
I think that limits and narrowly allows a narrow construction, because we have to say that, okay, there has to be chasing. That was the Grammer case in Nebraska. That was the Johnson case in Nebraska, where they talked about, okay, what does chasing mean? So it has to be some physical action, some aggressive action. In other words, that caused those damages that have accrued to the plaintiff.
In this particular context, do we have any rule of law that directs us to either strictly construe or broadly construe, or just is the standard plain and ordinary meaning the rule?
I think there are two things. First of all, where a statute tends to take away common law rights, then you can argue that that statute has to be strictly construed. In other words, at some point, common law rights that somebody could sue based upon common law, and that statute may have taken away some of those rights. So certainly you can say a strict construction. But we would also say, because the terms of that statute are clear and unambiguous, that it would involve a narrow construction. And that's exactly the same type of construction that the Nickel case in Oklahoma used to decipher that statute and result in the conclusion that the standard was proximate cause and it had to be dog on plaintiff.
So you're saying that at common law, the remedy would have been broader than this remedy?
It would, and I think that here, when you're talking about strict liability and telling an owner that you're strictly liable without regard to other defenses that may happen in other situations of common law, that has to be strictly and narrowly construed. Because here, what we have, as well as in the Nickel case, is the plaintiff had the ability to go into court. Here, the appellant submitted to the jury a claim based upon negligence, including that dog and the actions of that dog, and the jury found against him on those claims as well.
In your expression, excuse me, when you said under the statute, the way you see it, it would be limited to, using this phrase, dog on plaintiff or plaintiff's property?
Or plaintiff's property.
Is that what you are encompassing?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It could be, but here, Your Honor, the relevant facts would be the plaintiff is the one claiming personal injury. So he's the one who has to prove under the statute that there was some kind of chasing of him, wounding of him, killing of him, injuring of him under that statute. By the dog, and he has not done that. So we ask that you affirm the trial court's granting of partial directed verdict.
Before you sit down, I have one more question that we haven't touched on. Assuming the court takes a more liberal view of the interpretation of the statute than you're advocating for, from your research, are you familiar with the phrase playful and mischievous acts of a dog?
I am.
And if, assuming that this is a more liberal interpretation that the court would take, how would that apply to the situation?
You know, there's been obviously cases. The Underhill case talked about that type of issue. The Donner case talked about that kind of issue. I'm not sure that's terribly relevant to this case. Those cases looked at proximate causation, but also looked at the facts of those cases in terms of the playfulness and found that, again, that was not fit into any one of those items in the statute. I thought, coming here today, okay, are we at a place where, Your Honor, in your dissent, I think you joined in Judge McCormick's dissent in the Underhill case, and there was discussion, I understand that, about that word injure and about the issue of playfulness. I don't know in other jurisdictions if there necessarily is that distinction between playfulness and direct aggressive action, and I don't know if there needs to be. And certainly I don't think that was relevant to our case just because there was no direct aggressive action in any event.
Was this just a working dog doing its work? Is that more akin to a playful action of a dog, or more akin to a dangerous action of a dog?
The evidence, I think, would have suggested to us that this was a kind of a working dog. It was expected to help gather cows up on the field and bring them down. It was taught where to be and where not to be. So I think you can construe it as being a working dog. But I still think under the statute, that means that there had to be some kind of an action. So, for example, if that dog was biting Mr. Smith or chasing him or something like that, then I'm not here. It's a completely different result. But if we start these steps, and that's the problem of but for, you know, the state with the most litigation in dogs is Florida. And it stands to reason, because they have a very broad statute and they have but for proximate cause or but for causation. And so you end up with these cases that go far afield in terms of the actions of the dog in relation to the plaintiff. I just don't think that's where Nebraska is based upon the clear reading of our statute, and I don't think that's where we want to go. It's gonna breed uncertainty, it's gonna breed much more litigation. Your Honor, I'm not sure I've answered your question. I just don't see that come up in a lot of the cases, that distinction. It has come up in Nebraska. I'm just not sure if that distinction is relevant to the facts of our case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Welsh, we'll give you a minute of rebuttal there, but just a minute.
Just a minute. I still want you to look at that statute. I have used the exact words of the statute, and you answered, accrued means result, and this was the purpose. This was the purpose of the statute. That if, in fact, the owner or owners of any dog shall be, they are going to be liable for any and all damages that may accrue. And then you go to B, by reason of such dog injuring any person. You don't have to go past the or. There's another or there. This is what it's all about. This was the reason for the statute. And under the circumstances, you read the statute this way, and we're going back for a trial. Thank you
very much. That then takes us to the next case of the day, which is State